Can we talk for a minute? Whoa, I was way off, but I'm not on this episode, y'all. We gonna talk about some stuff. We got questions off of the internet and just some interesting stuff that B's been asking his students, and we thought, man, let's just answer these questions and see where, you know, the conversation takes us. So, hope you enjoy it. And if you want to hear more of these, let us know. We always want to hear what's on your thoughts. We love you guys so much. Here's Knights at the Roundtable. Hey, and welcome to another episode of Knights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy. I got the queen to the left, Be Real to the right.
Yeller.
And
I didn't say hello during my name. I said hello during B's name. Sorry.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. We are up in here chilling. It is a beautiful Sunday. And I was watching some football. I always feel more manly when I watch football. I'm not going to lie. I feel like I'm just really being a man. That, and then if I gas my car up the same day, then I'm really feeling
whoa.
If I wash it and gas it and watch football, dang. I pretty feel like I'm G.I. Joe.
Damn, Dad.
Right? Dang. Are you going to read the newspaper and cross your legs,
these
too?
These are the little things that you need to do to yourself to make you feel like you're doing something
that's
manly.
Like the sign of, like, Dad to me. Is, like, reading
man?
The paper and sitting there with your legs crossed. Like over like that. That is
that's
like
not
and
manly.
A cup of coffee. That's
so it's not
a
yeah.
dad.
You're trying to tell me it's not manly.
No, I said dad.
Okay. Either way, not manly. We're breaking open another Pirano Estates. A Merlot. Thank you, Pirano Estate, because I believe
they clones Merlot.
They sent us this guy. So
that says six clones.
I really appreciate that. Yeah. And this episode, this one and the next one, you know, for our beautiful Patreon members, thank you so much for supporting. Patreon, if you don't know, is a monthly support for anywhere from $2 to $25. And the $25 people we talk to on Zoom twice a month. And so our last freaking convo was dope as hell. We were on there for like an hour and 20 minutes talking everything. And so we asked them, hey, they get to speak into what episodes that we talk about. And we asked them what they wanted to hear. And at first it was like, we brought up the idea of doing some lighter hearted ones. And they're like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, we want to hear some lighter hard ones. And then when we asked them, okay, what are your ideas for some podcasts? They gave us hella serious ones. So we couldn't use any of their ideas for the lighter hearted ones. So we had to come up with
I think it's just lighthearted.
Yeah, lighthearted. So what did I say? Lighter hearted?
Lighter hearted.
That's the right way to say it. Lighter.
Lighter hearted is the right
lighter
way to
heart?
Say it. Lighter heart? It's lighthearted.
I think it'd be like lighter note. Or
yeah,
light-hearted.
On a lighter note, let's do a lighthearted episode.
Lighthearted. Something more lighthearted. Okay. And so we figured, let's just talk. And that's what I want to call this episode. Let's just talk. Part
or
one.
Or I was thinking, can we talk?
Can we talk for a minute?
First of all, you guys both sounded like you were the Vietnamese guy singing the numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Whatever.
That's how you both sounded right now.
We sounded better than that. And so we're gonna do some questions. We're just going to ask questions and we're just going to answer them and talk about it. And try our best to be lighter hearted.
I'm still thinking about that guy who's counting the numbers. His, my favorite one,
you know,
I think it's 27.
26, 27.
You know what's funny though?
My favorite number. I hate that you have a favorite number.
Babe, remember I told you this when we first got married, that that's what I do when I don't know words to a song.
You just count numbers?
I just count numbers
really?
In the melody. Yeah, so the fact that he came out with it, I was like, this guy beat me.
But he making up his own melodies and his own riffs.
And he's out in some forest. Like
20, yeah. Like you said, 27 goes hard.
Yeah, you're right. My bad.
I forgot there's another one. He goes in.
What's his name, Tiet?
I don't know. I just see his videos everywhere on Insta. And if hopefully you've seen these before. If not, I'm going to post it on my story when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
Check my story.
So the first question is, if you had a chance to rehear a song for the first time, what would it be?
I got like five in the bag. Music for me is like such a powerful thing. Like I think the only reason the Lord didn't give me a good singing voice was because he knew that my character could not handle that. If he did, oh man, it would have been a wrap a long time ago. But I sing every day, all the time. Maddie can attest to this, but there's a couple songs that I want to go back to. And the year is 2004. It's a big year for music. It's a big year for me. I'm in seventh grade. And at this time, my friend had enough money to get an iPod. And this was the iPod with the four buttons across and then the invisible wheel.
Yeah.
It was fire because the four dots would light up like this red color and the screen was just blue. So we went to a Christian school, and that Christian school was like pretty strict in their rules and stuff. So you weren't really allowed to listen to music. So it was kind of like other kids might have been smoking weed. Me and my boy, we were listening to music.
Oh, you rebels.
And so he was like, yo, there's this new song that came out on Usher's new album. I think you're going to love it. So we sit down and we're getting ready, and we had to split I'm so used to calling it AirPods. They're headphones.
Yeah, yeah.
So he takes one, I take the other, and all of a sudden he turns on this song, and I'm looking at the iPod and it says, yeah. And all of a sudden you hear that first note, boom, boom. And I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, Amon, this is the craziest song I've ever heard in my life. And I just remember hearing it, and it sounded unlike anything I had ever heard up until that point in my life. And my little seventh grade brain just damn near exploded with like, what kind of creativity is available? Like, and I'm hearing Usher scream, yeah. And then Ludacris was on it, and Luda had some bangers at that point.
Yeah. I mean, this was Usher season though. When Yeah came back, this is when he came back strong.
Dude, and like that whole song, I swear, I think we sat there at that bench for the entire lunch and we just listened to Yeah on repeat. We didn't even get to the rest of the album.
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, oh, this is my favorite song. This is the best song in the entire world that's ever been made. It was such a cool moment. Oh,
mine would have to be Eminem's Lose Yourself. Mm. If I could go back, because that the first time that it came out, I remember it was my soundtrack to my life. Because at this point, I was in Bible college. And I only went to Bible college just because God hasn't promoted me in music yet. So I'm like, I knew I was going to do music, and I was just like, okay, well, what am I going to do while I'm waiting? Well, let me go find out more about Jesus. Where do you do that at? You Bible college. So I went to Bible college and just waiting for God to graduate me, so to speak. And I remember driving home in my Del Sol. Well, I physically removed the top and I put in, and I would always drive and just look at the stars. And then this song, when it came out, I played it, and I cannot tell you how many times I had the most spiritual Jesus moments just praying and crying to that song. Mm-hmm. Like staring at the sky, driving down I-4.
Wait, what song is this again?
Lose Yourself. You gotta lose yourself in the moment.
Your arms are heavy. Knees weak.
Oh my God.
Mom's spaghetti.
It was like, it just hit me in all the right places. And so if I could go back and hear that again, to me, that song transformed me.
Man, I mean, there's definitely been a lot of songs that I've thrown on repeat. I would actually say, like, I was thinking as you guys were talking, different like childhood songs. Like there was this country song by the Judds. I forget what it's called, but it goes like, I laid a red rose on your front porch. I wrote I love you on a note. And I loved that song. It's like my only country song that I loved. Really? And I was a little kid and I used to love that one country song. But I would probably go back to The Greatest Showman and just listen to that for the first time again, because every time we play it, like we worship to that song, we cry to that song, we throw it and go for drives. The whole album. From now on, I think is my definite favorite.
Yeah,
from now on. But I would for sure go back and listen to that for the first time again.
Yeah, that was good.
I have another one.
Go.
Same thing, 2004. I'm in seventh grade. Big year for me. You know, starting to learn what booties could do. Like, that's like, that's really one of those like huge phases in your life. And I remember somebody, because this was always my gripe when I was a kid. So I was only allowed to listen to Christian music Except there were a few exceptions, like some oldies. So we could listen to like Jackson 5 or Stevie Wonder, or Earth, Wind & Fire, you know. And I just remember thinking, God, I hate Christian rap. It sucks. And people would be like, oh, you'd be really into this guy. You'd be really into this guy. And I'm like, this sucks. You just stole a beat from, I know exactly what fabulous beat this is.
Yeah.
And now you're bringing this trash. We're just, instead of saying baby, we're saying Jesus, you know. All this. So anyways, I had very low standards on Christian rap. And I always just wished I could listen to secular rap, which, wink, wink, I did. And so my friend was like, yo, there's this new, you know, Kanye West. I was like, yeah, the producer Kanye West. He's like, yo, he dropped an album. It's called The College Dropout. So my guy, my music plug, he's like, yo, we got to listen to the song. I think there's a song you might like. Like, shout out to Iman, bro. Shout out. If you're listening to this, bro, I know we haven't talked in years. Thank you. And he played for me Jesus Walks. And I remember hearing Kanye West spit bars on Jesus Walks. And all of a sudden, all it took was one song for me to believe in Christian rappers.
Yeah.
And when he's in, when, dude, he goes in with so many lines on Jesus Walks, but I just remember thinking, like, it actually did something that was really, like, pivotal for my life. I think early on in my journey, it made me feel like there can be dope art that, like, is Christian. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't have to be just, like, a copycat of what everything we're seeing in culture. But, like, you can actually pave something that's really dope, that honors God, and, like, everyone can rock with it. Mm-hmm. And that song, for me, put that in the back of my mind in seventh grade. And, dude, Jesus Walks, to this day, is still one of my favorite songs of all time.
You're like, bye, Usher.
Yeah. No, Jesus Walks.
Yeah. Repent, Usher.
Which, during that time, there was a lot of, like, these weird conspiracy rumors about, like, that whole album. Yeah. Really? Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay. So during this time, there was this preacher. I'm not going to mention his name because he's way fallen off and I don't want to give him any attention. But he was on this tear of like trying to tear down these secular artists.
Oh, no.
And was like supposedly unveiling what was happening behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. So he was talking about how Usher hired this witch to put a curse on that album that would make it appealing and catchy. So it wasn't because the songs
were talented.
It wasn't because those songs were just straight out boppers. This was because there was some voodoo shit behind this song.
Do we got that witch's phone number though?
Right.
I would love some creative juju.
If you could pick one artist to come up with the soundtrack for your life, who would it be? I would pick Drake.
Me too.
Only because I love Drake so much. Here's why. Because he's not afraid to be goofy. He's not afraid to be emotional. He's not afraid to be hard. Like, he literally is not afraid to be everything that I am every day. Mm. When he did his Pacquiao thing for the ESPYs,
yes.
I was like, this guy, I love him. When he did the skit with Ferrell.
They're doing handshakes.
I'm like, this guy can simultaneously be the biggest goofball. And I think it's genius. And then turn around and just hit after hit after hit after hit. And at the same time, we'll sing. That's the one thing I know God didn't give me. Because if I could like sing, I know I would be in more trouble than I was.
And that album would be fired. Like, you would have these hard like rap joints, like, ugh, like just worst behavior, you know? Like, just getting into that place. And then you'd have these smooth, just, I'm driving with my girl, come through, you know? Come and then through. All the features and stuff. Like, you would have like dance hall type records, reggae, like you would have the drill sound, then you would have like this weird like Memphis kind of sounding type rap, like it's just wow.
How about you, babe?
Lauryn Hill. Miseducation.
Yeah, sure.
She can sing and rap, man.
Sing, rap, the stories she's able to tell, a full-on story. She wrote a story about how her team wanted her to have an abortion, basically, right? Like, do you really want that right now? Like, your career is about to blow up. And she's just talking about it in one of the catchiest songs ever. Like,
talking about Zion?
That? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, she don't actually say abortion, but it's, you know, insinuating. Do you really want this right now? You know, like, it's an option. But I don't know. I love that album. I love her. All of it. I would have her write a soundtrack to my life, and it would be fire. She would get me. She would make me a believer in myself again. Like, not that I don't believe in myself, but I'd be like, yes, I'm that fabulous. Thank you.
And her Unplugged album is still like low key on repeat for me. That was like such a worship album for me.
I remember.
And she, like that song, I Just Want You Around, I would sing that to the Lord all the time. The other song is Just Like Water. That song brought so much peace to my soul. Wow. Like those parts, Lauryn Hill.
I'll go back and listen to that.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I haven't listened to that.
It was so good. I bought it on vinyl.
Yeah. We need more vinyls.
Oh, what terrified you as a kid that doesn't anymore? I'm going to have to say certain bathrooms.
Wait.
What?
Okay, so when I was back in Kansas, when I lived in Kansas, this is how trippy I was. One time, I used the downstairs bathroom in our townhome, right? And that's when I got my first stomach ache, in that downstairs bathroom. And for the rest of the 6 years that I lived in that house, I wouldn't use that bathroom because I thought I would get a stomach ache.
Okay.
So that type of crazy thinking, I don't think that way anymore.
Okay.
I'm glad.
But that scared me. That legitimately scared me. As a kid, I was traumatized. I don't know.
Well, you still have bathroom
issues. Yeah, but I don't like not use a certain bathroom because I got a stomachache in it. That's
what
like, that's over, that's
scared
overboard.
Scared you as a kid.
I didn't really get scared by other stuff.
But doesn't anymore as an adult.
All mine are spiritual. There's two things. One was demons. Like, oh, I was so afraid of the demonic as a kid because I would have these like crazy like encounters with like these evil spirits. Like,
oh, wow.
Whether it was in dreams, whether it was in real life, whether it was like presences that I could feel in my room. And then being around like charismatic settings growing up, I saw demons getting casted out of people. And it scared the hell out of me. Like, I was thinking like, oh my God, these demons are powerful. Like, they're not coming out of these people. And they're sending like more and more like pastors to like, and I've seen human bodies do things that human bodies shouldn't do out of like possession of demonic thing. So I'm seeing this stuff as a kid and I'm hearing these stories because like, you know, Christians don't really, at that point, didn't really have scary stories. We just had like exorcism stories. Like, let's go around the circle and around the campfire, let's share our demonic story, you know? And so I was terrified of that. And it wasn't until like I casted out my first demon where I was like, oh, I got this. I don't need to be scared no more.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was I was legitimately scared of the second coming of Jesus because I was so afraid that I truly wasn't saved and that I would get left behind.
Wow.
So the whole left behind thing with Kirk Cameron
messed
and,
you up.
Dude, it messed me up. Like, no, I am for reals. Like, as a kid, probably between grades like fourth and sixth grade, I remember most nights it was tough for me to sleep and I would check my parents' room to make sure that Jesus didn't come back and leave me behind.
Oh, wow.
Like, I would lay in bed and I would like confess of any sin that I could even think of. I'm like making up sins at this point just to make sure like my slate is clean, that if this were to happen in the night, there is no bad thing on the table. Jesus will take me. And dude, it was like very traumatizing. Like, getting left behind truly was terrifying for me as a kid.
Wow.
I wasn't sure of my salvation until much later.
Man, I don't know what scared me as a kid. Like, I think of like earthquakes, but then I kind of like earthquakes now. Like, it's fun, you know.
Fun because we haven't gotten affected by one, babe.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, but I'll wake up at the one the other day at like 4 a.m. or whatever, and I wake up to it, and it's scary at first, but then when it goes away and you realize you're still alive, like, and nothing broke in your house, and you're like, ooh, that was fun.
That was an adventure. Is there going to be an aftershock?
Yeah. Kidnappers, I guess. I was afraid of kidnappers as a kid. I mean, I'd still be looking over my shoulder if I'm in a parking lot, though.
Oh, like, absolutely.
For somebody trying to grab me. So I guess I'm still scared.
I don't know why I don't have no weird scary. I wasn't really scared.
There wasn't any scary movies you watched growing up? Were you afraid of Candyman?
Candyman was bad. Candyman. But I won't lie. I still won't do that. I ain't going into a bathroom saying Candyman 5 times. Won't happen. I'm not even going to play with it. You know? Like.
Oh, I know one. Dark hallways.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, dark hallways were so scary. Now, this guy won't walk around the house at night with the like doors, because we have doors with that are just windows the whole time, and he's scared of those. I don't even care.
When I'm by myself.
Still.
That when I'm by myself, I get a little nervous because I'm like, we got way too many windows and doors that you could see. I'm like, we have the easiest peeping Tom house you've ever seen in your life.
The other thing, do you remember that movie Attack on? It was Attack from Mars?
No.
And it was those weird alien looking things. They had, here, I'm going to pull up a picture so you can see this. Like, I remember seeing this. Yeah, it was Attack on Mars, and those aliens look like this.
Is this a Christian movie?
No. Do you remember that movie?
No.
Dude, I remember, I don't think I could show you guys, but it's Attack on Mars, and they had these aliens with these like big old brains, and it was like in this glass dome. And in the actual movie, I remember walking by the TV when it was being played, and I saw that, and I had this nightmare in like later that night that alien was across the hallway from my room and was just waiting for me to wake up. And I was like, oh my God. So I remember for like probably like some months, man, I was terrified of that alien. Like, dude, and it's just like, I was such a scared kid growing up. Like, and I like, I'm not going to make this like super spiritual right now, but I really think like, I think there was something to that. Like the amount of fear that I had to battle as a kid, I think it was like actually pointing to the calling or the destiny that I actually have in my life to like actually walk this thing out and be as fearless as possible and walk with boldness and courage and all that sorts of good stuff. So as a kid, I can look back and laugh because I could probably talk about 12 other things that I was like deathly afraid of growing up. And I remember like I would literally just like be paralyzed with fear. Like I just couldn't move. I'd be shaking. I'd be crunched up. And man, yeah, like
now look at you.
Now look at me. Look at how loud I'm talking. Loud voices.
Loud this voice is a hard means one. Confident.
This is a hard one because I'm such a throwawayer. But what is the oldest thing you own? Does this mean when you say the oldest thing you own, does that mean like the age of the thing?
Yes.
Or does it mean how long you've kept something? Like the oldest thing I own is like my teddy bear from eighth grade.
I guess it's a twofold question then. I think it could apply to both because like the oldest thing I own is a vintage tee.
Mm.
It's like it's this, oh man, it is this Rolling Stones tee from like, I want to say 91, 90, around there. But then...
Got you.
But the something which I've talked about before is this ring that I have right now. It's serving as my wedding band, but this M ring, which belonged to
Maddie's
great grandmother and her newly found love. And so I don't know how old it is. I just know like, yeah, it's old.
Okay. Then I guess that would be mine because I have my parents' class rings. I was going to say my classic Porsche, but. That's only from 89. My parents' ring is from like the 60s.
That's dope.
Wowzers.
I still have them. I haven't gotten rid of it.
I have...
You have a lot of old stuff.
I have my Thea Mary's crystal that she handed down, which she got in 1982, the year that I was born. That is the thing that I can think of most. I'm sure I
have... Her little jeans from Levi's?
That was when she retired as well.
I mean, your pictures are older than that.
Oh yeah, I have old photos for sure. My mom just gave me one of my grandma's old aprons. But I'll just say my Thea Mary's crystal. It's from 1982, and I actually use that.
Yeah, we use it a lot.
Quite often.
Wait. What is a tough pill everyone should swallow at some point?
You're not special. No.
God doesn't care what you think. No, I really do think this is something that God showed me recently. I was listening to Richard Rohr, and don't get offended by when I say God don't care what you think. What I mean by it is I was listening, and this was post something happening online that I think, oh, it was probably because of the I got kind of bothered by certain people when we dropped the podcast, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a, you know, F. And it started bothering me. And something that Richard Rohr said that hit me first, and then I applied it to other people, which was God's didn't care what you thought about someone else's salvation. He was, because he was talking about judging people, and he was talking about that part in the sermon where God, which Christ was like, judge not lest ye be judged. And he was like, we are so self-absorbed that we think we need to get our opinion about someone else's salvation and whether or not they're saved, or a group of people, that we feel that we're doing God some kind of justice. Right. We're doing the church, some the world, some type of justice by judging someone. When God was like, judge not lest ye be judged. Because he could care less about what you think of someone else's salvation. Mm. He gives two shits about what all these Christians think about my music and whether or not they think I'm saved or not saved. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that makes me feel good. It's not that he don't care about them and what they think about their own life.
Right.
But he does not care what they think about my life.
Right.
He only cares about what me and him think about my life. Because our relationship is personal. And a lot of these people got it confused. They actually think they're doing the church a service, or they think they're doing themselves a service, or me a service, by coming out their mouth saying what they think about my life and my walk. Mm. And now I'm just going to be like, God don't care what you think.
How's your heart?
Neither do I. Like, he don't care what you think. I'll be sure to talk to him about what I think about me, but I'm not going to go to him when I think about you.
That's such a boop right there. Like, because typically if somebody comes for me, I'd be like, I don't care what you think. But now I'm just going to be like, God does not care what you think.
And it's not a negative. People, when they hear it, they're going to automatically be triggered and be like, no, the Lord cares about every hair on my head. And I'm not saying he doesn't. No. We are specifically talking about your judgment on another person. He does not care about that because he deals with that person on a personal level, not through your eyes of what you think that person is. That's deep.
Yeah.
You are not that center of the world. Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think.
Dude. What's the question again?
What is a tough pill everyone should swallow at some point?
You go, Brandon.
So I asked this on my Instagram, and I'm just going to quickly go through them. You guys can stop me, okay? Climate's going to keep getting worse, whether you believe humans caused it or not. Mm-hmm. The U.S. isn't the best country on earth.
Right.
You didn't hit a triple. You were born on third base.
Mm. Wait, say this. Pause on that one.
You didn't hit a triple. You were born on third base. That's for privilege.
Okay.
So people thinking, I accomplished all this. Uh-huh. No, you were born on third base.
Ooh.
This is a good one. Donald Trump isn't going to save America. Now, whether you're Republican or Democrat, this doesn't matter. This isn't a political thing. And I think, too, even as Christians... I think we ought to believe that.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird to think that someone else is supposed to save America when we're professing that Jesus is the one that saves.
If we are truly the church, the higher governing body, the ecclesia, as scripture would put it, then we have a responsibility to live out these values of the kingdom of God and to bring heaven down here on earth. Donald Trump ain't gonna do it. Okay. What is a tough pill? The world does not revolve around you. The other thing that I would have connected to that is whoever they is, they aren't thinking about you.
Yeah. Ooh.
Like,
yeah.
I like that.
I've really learned that in my 20s, right? Mm-hmm. Coming in on 30 here, a couple months. I think one of the biggest lessons is, Brandon, they aren't thinking about you.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's so this weird game. And I think it plays itself out, especially on social media.
Yeah.
And social media isn't real. Like, you know, if you haven't seen The Social Dilemma, go watch it. Yeah. Oh, if you've canceled your Netflix account, borrow somebody.
Right.
Use there. But then that thing of like, we do so much to bend over backwards to impress them, thinking that in their thoughts, possibly their view might be skewed or change on how they see us. But the truth is, they're thinking about themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, the quicker that you could get to that point, man, the more free you're going to live your life. Let's see. What else is social media isn't real? The absence of pain is the absence of growth.
Mm, that's good.
That was a good one. Everything moves on.
Yeah. That's I learned that one. When I was touring. I thought people were supposed to stay where they were at, missing me.
Mm. No.
And then when I came home and people had lives, I was like, what the hell? What just happened?
This is a good one too. Leadership is a highly sought after role, yet most people aren't ready for what comes with it. And then last one, if you grew up in America, you were trained and influenced by racism and sexism.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough pill.
That's a tough pill.
Do-do-do. Tough pills.
I like this segment.
Oh, man. If you could go back and
I didn't say my tough pill.
Oh, you didn't say your tough... Oh, my bad, babe.
No. It's okay because I don't really have one, but I was just going to...
What is a tough pill everyone should swallow at some point?
I mean, the things that were coming to my mind were something in the realm of... You're right where you're supposed to be, because we like social media. We compare and we think we're supposed to be there. We're supposed to be that. And it's okay to have goals. I'm not speaking against goals. But sometimes we idolize other people's lives and we covet other people's lives and we want what we don't have. But... really, you're right where you're supposed to be. Like, you have to own your stuff, own where you're at, own your shadow side, own the parts of you that are not ugly, that are ugly, and take a hard look at yourself in the mirror. You're right where you're supposed to be and work on yourself from there. Yeah. and grow from there.
Yeah, I'll add to that. That's so good. Richard Rohr, he has this thing, and I'm being a little extra heavy with this pour. Sheesh. Richard Rohr has this thing, and it's a mantra that I say to myself very often. And it's weird because as I've said this and I've started to believe it, my life has improved. Mm. And he says this, that this moment is as perfect as it can be.
Yeah.
Mm. And if I can't find joy now, I will never know real joy.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I say that to myself often of like when I'm with you guys and like even yesterday when we're hanging out and we're just talking around the table, I just kept thinking to myself, I was like, yo, this moment is as perfect as it can be, mm-hmm. you know?
Special.
And the other thing that he says is he goes, if you can't be now here, you're nowhere.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of the wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal is to always be now, here in the now. Mm-hmm. So if we're not now here, then we are nowhere.
Wow.
I like Richard Rohr. Yeah.
That's good.
He gives me some stuff.
He's my Franciscan father.
That's good.
If you could go back and tell yourself a few things before the coronavirus, what would you tell yourself?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things I'll tell myself. I would say, hey, man, you can weigh 200 pounds. You have never even come close to approaching it in your life, but it is possible for your frame to weigh 200 pounds because that shit was a surprise. I stepped on the scale and I was like, babe, I weigh 200 pounds right now. And that was scary because the most I've ever weighed was about 180. The most. And that was when I was like really trying to get jacked. But 200 seemed like never. Maybe when I'm 60 and I just given up on life. But I would tell myself, you can weigh 200 pounds. That, and I would say, I would tell myself, control is an illusion. Because I had so many plans for this year and I didn't get to do one. Not one. And it really bummed me out because I feel like I missed out on a year. Like, I feel like I literally missed out on all of 2020 because I had all these plans. But then I think it kind of ended up being pretty, pretty dope. Nothing really happened. I had a lot of fun, which I'm sorry if you didn't. I'm sorry if it's been a hard year for you. It's been a hard year for everyone in different ways, but I've had a lot of fun in this year letting go of control. And as much as it's scary, I've just turned it into a game of just fun. Because if I can grasp that God is really in control, if I can truly like believe that, I don't think I'll ever fear anything again. So those are the two things I'll tell myself.
Is God in control?
I mean, if we say that our steps are ordered, and he's the author and finisher of our fate, then yeah. Mm. You know, am I saying that he's the one that's causing things to happen? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if I offer myself up to the wisdom of what he is and offers me, then he is in control of what my life turns out to be. So I'm not assigning him things. Like, you did this corona thing. I'm more saying, okay, life is happening as it always has. And I'm taking in this information as it happens. And now I'm asking you what to do with this information.
Right now, when you just said you weren't assigning him things, like, you did this corona thing. I remember this funny TikTok video I saw of this guy pretending to be Jesus talking to God. And he, like, knocks on the door and he opens it, like, coming into his dad's office. And he goes, hey, Dad, can I talk to you for a second? Like, so, like, everybody is, like, talking about this corona thing. And, like, they keep blaming me for that. But I'm like, that's not me. Like, that's your thing. So, like, but it's so funny. What was the question again?
Well, if you could go back and tell your pre-corona self something.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, call the HOA in Nashville and make sure they don't cancel that appraisal.
My God. Freaking asses. Stupid
sons. Okay. What I would tell my pre-COVID self, right before the pandemic happened and everything shut down, I was doubting a lot of things and decisions that I had made. I would tell myself, you're right where you're supposed to be. You made the right decision. Settle in, rest, embrace, and stay in the moment. Very much kind of like what you were just saying, like, be here now. Just be so grateful and stay in each moment. I would tell myself that. I mean, I would tell myself that for the rest of my life, but for sure, like, girl, this year about to get even crazier. You thought this was crazy. Wait, it's going to get...
Still not over.
Worse on worse. But just stay present in the moment. You're right where you're supposed to be.
That's good. I think for me, one kind of silly thing was I would have said, invest in all these tech stocks. I got really scared at that front end, and so I started pulling some stuff out, and I should have just rode that wave. I would have been sitting real pretty.
Invest in Purell.
Yeah. Stock up on toilet paper, Brandon. Make sure your car is gassed up. We might not have access to gas stations anymore. Okay. The other thing I would say for me is don't fight this. Just ride the wave. Because this wave is giving you the opportunity to restart, to realign, to reconnect, to refresh, to reorient yourself. It's a wave of re. And I think at first I was fighting it because I was like, oh no, this is new. Like, I had my things going. I had my plans. And this wave came and it was like, oh man, all of that is out. And I was still trying to make stuff happen instead of just like letting go. Right? That's like one of the hardest things is to truly let go and trust God. Kind of a little bit what you were just saying is like, can I surrender myself to this flow of the universe? Because if I truly believe that the flow of the universe is love and this whole, the way that this universe is made and shaped, it's belonging. Like, if I truly believe that I am loved and I belong, dude, things are going to work out. And Brandon, the sooner that you could just ride this wave, the sooner that you will come to the realization that God might have something different, but that different also includes better for you. Because this year, and again, I know that this is like, and hear my heart, everybody, I am not doing this to rub in anybody's faces, but I think it's more of an encouragement that, like, as crazy, as chaotic, as dark as this year has been, on a personal, on a relational, and I even feel bad for saying this, financial level, this has been Maddie and I's best year. And like, I don't even credit that to myself or anything that I can muster up, but like, man, like, I believe more than ever that God has got us. Like, in the craziest times, when you realize that you can't make it on your own, and when you realize that you've hit your own wall or you've hit your own ceiling, whatever dimension that you want to measure that in. Like, the sooner that you could get to the point where I have surrendered my life, I trust him who is love, and he has got my back, he is faithful to me. Dude, all of a sudden things start opening up in the way that you couldn't do it in your own, you know? Yeah. So that's been like, I'd have told myself that. And I think that would have given myself 3 less months of just stressing the hell out of like, how are we going to finesse this?
No,
but like, yo, man, God is good. Like,
yeah. I agree. What is attractive regardless of gender? I'm going to have to say confidence. Mm. That's going to have to be my thing.
Yeah.
On either side, no matter who you are, if you're truly confident in who you are, it's an attractive quality. There's nothing worse than a fly chick who's not confident. Like real confident. Not like confident in her best attributes, but just like confident in even in her weaknesses. Cause she knows that she has a spirit or a personality of continually getting better.
I would say joy. Mm. I think of like Tiffany Haddish, who in any interview you see her in, she's smiling and like magnetic and sharing that energy. And not to say she doesn't have bad days. And I mean, if you hear her story, she had a, you know, crazy life and upbringing. But she operates in joy. Mm. And that is so attractive. I think I remember this one viral video years ago. It was called The Happiest DJ in the World. And it was this old man, like senior citizen man, who was a DJ at like a bar mitzvah or something. And he plays this one song and he is just going at it. And like, if he's like at this club and he's like, you know, 25 years old, just like raging, and he's happy. He's so happy. And I see that. And that is attractive. Like, yeah. I love that. And it's so magnetic. And I'm like, I want that. Like, yes, I want to be by you. It makes me smile. And like, I want to be here forever. Let's hang out and be friends. Like that joy is attractive.
Mm. I'd say another quality for me is someone who is passionate. Passion, like when you find people who are passionate about what they do, that inspires you. Mm. Like even if it's not in the same field, like I'll share a quick story. So Complex is kind of like it's like a culture site. So mm-hmm. It's like a website. They talk about music and sports and art, all this sorts of stuff. But they had this convention called the Complex Con. And up until this year, obviously, it happens like in the fall time, always in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And so they have like a plethora of like different artists that come through. So two artists that were my favorite, not even necessarily because their music, even though I appreciate them, was T-Pain. And like, dude, it was so cool. He did like probably like a 40-minute set, and he just did like 2 or 3 minutes of each song. And he has obviously hits on hits on hits on hits. But like, I mean, the crowd wasn't crazy big, but it was sizable. But like, this guy was like performing his butt off. Like, it was such a joy. And this sounds funny as the words are coming out of my mind into my mouth. It was such a pleasure to watch T-Pain perform.
Mm-hmm.
Because this guy was truly like, he was truly passionate about this music he was performing in, and he believed in this music he was singing. And he's like dancing his heart out. He's doing his little, like, you know, all that sorts of stuff. And you just thought, wow, this is so inspiring right now. Yeah. Like, even though with the autotune and everything. And right after him was this artist, she's an R&B singer. Her name's Tinashe. And Tinashe, like, she has some hits or whatever, and like, she's a cute girl. So usually, like, a lot of her kind of like music videos or thing is like pretty revealing and stuff, which, hey, whatever. And she was performing, and dude, she put on like one of the best performances ever.
Mm.
And people were starting to leave because T-Pain had just gotten done, so people were dipping, and she was up there and she was hitting like every move and everything, and she was smiling the entire time. Like, you just left with this thought of like, this woman right here is doing what she is supposed to do. Like, this, she was born to perform like this. Mm. And she is singing her heart out with so much passion. And I left like so inspired by these two artists, because I was just like, man, what am I showing my passion about in life? Because I just think like, regardless of gender, man, that passion, like when you were passionate about something and you find your lane and you were giving your best effort in that, and like, that's so inspiring for everybody else, yeah, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah. I have a question that just dropped in my head. We always talk about the internet or social media in a negative way. Not we as in we, but I'm talking about just pretty much culture. You know, there's a lot of negativity around it, which is true. There's a lot of negativity on social media and the internet. But what's one thing you learned today from the internet or from social media? Like one thing specific. And I'll start, because for me, I watched Vlad TV. I always watch his things.
Yeah, his interviews are crazy.
And he interviewed Akon. And Akon, I've heard like bits and pieces of his story, but nothing like to the extent. And so I was listening about Akon and how he was born in Africa, then came over here till he was 8, then back to Africa, then back to here, was in Jersey City, started getting into drugs and then robbing cars. And he went from robbing people at gunpoint, stealing cars, to using his brain to become a better businessman. So he started stealing cars from valets and paying valets off. Like, I'll give you $500 if you find a spare key in the car that I can just come through and scoop the car, and I'll give you $500 cash right then and there. Then he started paying, he started going to car dealerships and pretending to buy a car and sometimes test drive them if he's allowed to test drive without somebody, mm-hmm, and just never come back. Or if he finds keys laying around, he would take the key and just find out which car was outside just by pushing the alarm and then just getting in the car and bouncing. This guy was such a businessman that he would take these cars, and then because they were from a dealership, they've never been bought or registered, he would register them and put insurance on them so that if he ever got caught, it's like up and up. No, this is my car. I was registered to my name. I have insurance on it and everything, like legit. So I'm like listening to a story and I'm like, this guy, wow, was born.
My mind's filling with
to be a genius, because he is figuring this thing out. So he was, at one point, he's like in his criminal world, he's making like 180 grand a week.
Oh my gosh.
So because he has no place to put this money, he starts building studios around Atlanta, like full blown studios, and letting artists, local artists, come and record their demos for free. Because he's funneling his money. So he's going to pretend like they're paying him to be there, but it's really just his money paying himself back. But simultaneously, he's giving these artists a chance to do their demo for free. Like, how much of a hood hero is that? You know what I'm saying? Even though he's getting money the wrong way, but he's like, my heart felt bad for robbing people. So much so that the last person I robbed, I returned the car. I found out the address, took it back, and I dropped it off in the thing with the keys, and I left. And he's like, I finally got caught, not because he did something wrong, but because one of his customers or whatever told. And so he ended up doing a little bit of time, because since he didn't do it by gunpoint, he was doing it the smart way. Technically, he just got, it's like you get charged for like joyriding.
Yeah.
Because you have the key, you haven't stolen it from anyone, you're just taking a car for a ride that you shouldn't be in. So, but he got told on, so he ended up doing some jail time. He's 3 years in total. And he's like, my wake-up call was when I see the Fugees blow up. Because he was in the Fugees camp. He was producing with them and writing with them and, wow, all that stuff. And so he's like, when I'm in prison, and then I see, this is when the score comes out. And the score was the Fugees' biggest record. It went like freaking diamond, which is 10 million copies sold. He's in prison and he's watching his crew, like the people that he's, wow, with, blow up. And that's when he knew, he was like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do this differently. So when he gets out, Wyclef was always telling him, you should do this music thing. You should do this music thing. So when he gets out is when he finally starts taking music serious, and finally gets himself a deal with this small label. He's like, there was like four other labels, you know, trying to shop with me. And he signs with this small company because he's like, this dude, Steve, was like, I believe in you. I don't have all the money that all these other labels have, but what I do is I believe in you. And I think you should always invest in the people that believe in you. And he's like, I believe them. So he rocked with them. He went with this dude, Steve. And when you hear his story of how the label wanted to blow this other song, so one of his biggest songs, his first biggest song, was Locked Up. And it was, yeah, about him being locked up. And he wanted to promote that song, but the label was like, nah, we're going to promote this song, Belly Dancer.
I remember that track.
So he's like, all the money went to Belly Dancer. Mm-hmm. Check this, though. He's like, Steve, Locked Up is the one. And Steve was like, I know, but they're not giving me any money. So Steve was like, I'm going to give you the only money I have. Here's $10,000. Figure it out. So Akon gets in a van and starts just traveling all over playing this music from this van, right? This is how much this guy's a hustler. Trying to get it into DJ's hands. So he would go to DJs, and a lot of the DJs were owed money from the dude Steve, from the label, his boy. And he's like, so I'm paying DJs off, saying, hey, Steve, send some money. Can you play this new song? So they're playing it. And all of a sudden, in Jersey, they catch wind, and they're like, hey, this song Locked Up. One of the correctional facilities, one of the prisons, are like, yo, we heard this song. Would you mind coming to our prison and, like, playing a little bit and talking to these inmates? And he's like, yeah, that sounds dope. I'll come. So he goes and he plays at this prison in Jersey. Then Philly hears about it because the same people manage each prison. So he's like, would you come and do it in Philly? He's like, yeah, I'll go to Philly. So by the end of it, he ends up having
a prison tour.
Wow.
But he's doing it because he's like, I'm trying to tell these people my story so that they don't end up where I'm at. So, like, the whole time you hear his heart, like, he's like, this is a good dude that just ended up, you know, which skips to why he gave Tekashi his, you know, a remix for Locked Up. Because he's like, he understands good people in bad situations with bad people around him. So, fast forward, Locked Up ends up blowing up, being his big song. And so that just sends him.
Yeah.
He's only put out 3 records in his career. Each record has gone diamond. That's 30 million records sold. He's only done 3 records.
Each of them have gone diamond.
Diamond.
That's crazy. I did not know that.
He's like, I've never had big openings. They just consistently sold 100,000 units every year, every week. Just keep going. Just a little engine that could. Wow. So then he signs Lady Gaga, T-Pain.
Never heard of her.
Signs T-Pain, Lady Gaga, like all these people. He had the possibility to sign Drake, but the Drake record, the demo that he heard, Drake was trying to sound like Eminem. So he was like, no, we already have an Eminem. Why is this guy trying to sound like Eminem? And then he came out with Best I Ever Had or whatever. And he was like, I didn't hear that Drake. I heard the Eminem Drake, so
Aubrey,
I passed on it.
Aubrey, come on now.
Dang it.
He's like, so I passed on it. And he's like, but I think Drake is a genius. But this guy goes on to sign Gaga, which was the biggest artist. T-Pain, also one of the biggest artists. Yeah. Then now what he's doing is literally investing in Africa. And he has brought electricity to more than 300 million people.
Yeah.
He has his own city that is already broken ground in Senegal. They gave him 3 square miles, and he's building his own city. He has his own cryptocurrency, Akoin.
Oh my God.
And he's like, perfect. By 2024, you will be able to come to this city. By 2026, you will be able to live in this city. There is no taxes in this city. This guy went from robbing cars to now building cities in Africa.
Wow.
To bringing electricity.
Wow.
To hundreds of millions of people.
Won't he do it?
I'm just like, yo, I'm like, I will never doubt anyone. I'll never doubt anyone because I guarantee you he never thought this was a reality, like that he can go from there to there. But to see his hustle and to see his heart the whole time in this whole situation, like you can tell this is a good dude. Like he really does. He was a street dude, but he really does only care about people now. So he's like, everything I do, he's like, I even contemplated running for president. Just so I can help Africa.
Wow.
So I didn't do it because A, I feel I'm too young, and B, because my motive was wrong. Mm. Like, I want to run this country so I can help Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I should want to help this country.
Mm-hmm.
But there's things in this country that you can't do because of how messed up this country is. But in Africa, he's like, if black people only knew how much opportunity there is in Africa. Like, we're scared of Africa over here because all you see is like, you know, you hear the stories, you know, you think it's underdeveloped. You see it's nothing but poor people. But he's like, Africa is this world of like possibility where you can go buy some land and start your own city. Wow. And they'll welcome it if you have good intentions for their people.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's so crazy.
It was the best way to start my day. I didn't know any of this stuff, and I was literally blessed. Like, I was like, wow, we can literally do amazing. And he's like, you know when he realized that he can do all these things? When he went to Africa. Mm. He's like, I got out of the U.S. and I went to Africa, and I realized I could do anything. Mm. When I'm in America, you think I can't do anything because you see the rules that we play by. And black people aren't necessarily, he's like, I'm not, it's not, and Vlad brought this up. He's like, I've always known to have tension between white and black people because I was raised here in America. But when I went to Africa, they loved me over there. They treated me like I was family. Mm. And Akon's like, yeah, we don't have that same history. We love people over there. It's like a, it's very like a loving culture. Mm. And
interesting.
It was a 2-hour pod. I listened to the whole thing while I was at the gym. But that's something I learned today, and it just brightened my day.
I mean, I didn't really learn anything like that today.
If you learned anything, you didn't have to. I'm just saying, if the internet taught you anything today.
I watched this video about Trump's nominee for justice, for Supreme Court justice. And that she is a part of a Christian group, something praise. I forget what it's
People
called.
People of Praise.
People of Praise.
Like a singing group?
No. Oh. Like a group. Sure. Like she, you subscribe on Facebook. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what the group is. But up until 2018, they referred to the women in the group as handmaids. That's what this article was saying. And I was like, what?
Like the Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah, that's part of the reason why they stopped referring themselves as the Handmaids.
Oh, because of the show?
Yeah, the popularity of it and how in some ways there's a lot of connections. I'm not saying the whole thing is like that, obviously, because that's a huge exaggeration, but a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because, and I'm sorry, I'm stealing
no,
your...
that's all I had to say. That's all I learned. Yeah. So
it's and I've thought about this because I was a part of... and I'll just get into this really quick. For a long time, the single issue that only mattered to me was overturning Roe versus Wade, right? When it comes to abortion. And again, I'm pro-life, but I'm not just pro-fetus. And I do, like, to me, abortion is like, it's a very nuanced conversation. And I know there'd be some people that'd be mad because to a lot of people, it's very black and white. Mm-hmm. Abortion, bad, evil. Keep baby, good. And to me, I'm like, there's so many underlying factors that involve this conversation. Mm-hmm. Because always at the crux of this is black and brown bodies who are mostly affected by abortions. So with that, I ask myself, is overturning Roe versus Wade the silver bullet to ending abortion? And I was in the shower kind of grasping with this for just a moment. I was like, all right, I got 10 minutes. Let me wrestle with this thought for 10 minutes. I don't know if anyone else does that based off how much time you're like, this is how much I'm going to just wrestle with this. And I just thought, I'm like, okay, if this gets overturned, what's going to happen is obviously it's going to go down to the states. But from that, from the states where it's now become completely legal, what's going to happen is women are going to have to now go in secret to get this done. And it's going to be a lot more dangerous than it would be if it was legal. And again, I'm not saying that I don't care about these babies' lives. I do. Like, if it was a perfect world, these babies would be adopted, you know, and whatever. But yeah, it's this whole weird conversation.
But only by straight families. Yeah. Gays are not allowed to adopt.
Which is like, it's a whole nother conversation, right? So to me, it's like, when I have these conversations with people, I just say, hey, this conversation is very nuanced. Understand that. This is not a black and white. One thing I learned today was how church attendance was declining before COVID. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Which in my mind, that's made sense. And I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. But I was reading this article today and it was actually very good. And it talks about the church has left the building. 5 truths about the future church attendance and commitment. And it was talking about a lot of people have been like, oh, our church attendance is down because of COVID and all that sorts of stuff. But the truth of the fact is, before COVID happened, truth attendance was down. Now, I'll read you just a quick thing. Every single year from 2003, church attendance in every single generation has gone down. Which, it's interesting, because that would probably be a whole nother good conversation about why do we actually think that that's happening? I have thoughts.
Yeah.
But we won't share. But as far as millennials, the number now is a little bit less than 25% now of attending church.
Wow.
And this was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Now, post-COVID, I'm really thinking through of like, what does a church actually look like? Because I think a lot of people aren't willing to trade their 45-minute session or podcast that they can listen to for actually going for a 3 to 4 hour experience on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I just don't think people are going to trade that. Mm-hmm. Because I think people, for the first time in a long time, have actually now are part of intentional communities. And they're realizing this is actually, I think, what church was trying to get at. Mm-hmm. But we're not actually finding it in the church building on Sunday. I'm wasting all this time to be fake connected to people I don't feel connected with at all.
Yeah.
And now I actually feel connected and I can do church on my own time. Like, wow, the freedom of this is like, and this was, I was really learning this. And there was also another thing too, is I think I've been hearing some people talk about like, in these days, like we really need to increase our devotion to God. But like, it's kind of like code for like, why aren't you showing up to our live stream on Sundays? Mm-hmm. Are you losing devotion?
Yeah.
And I think, and this thing said, infrequent church attendance in this culture now today is not necessarily a sign of decreasing devotion. It's just a sign of the shifting culture. That I think people are going to now become actually truly a part of spiritual, faith-filled communities. And in a lot of ways, the church building hasn't been the place for that. And I think the church building is now going to shift to actually equipping people to live lives outside of the walls. Because church has been this huge place, and I was thinking about this today, so it's like got me really thinking that like for so long, the best we could do is to try and gather. Hey, come to our service on Sundays. Hey, we got a special speaker. Hey, we got a conference. Hey, we got an event. All these sorts of things to gather bodies in the house when the whole point was let's equip you, give you the tools to live healthy lives with God all over it and then send you out. And so you could live your regular lives in your communities with God all over you. That's it. Like, that's the secret. And I think like, I'm realizing, oh, that's where this is headed. Because once we get on the other edge of this, there's going to be some churches who really fight this.
That's interesting. I don't, you know what? I want to stop you because it's going to be much better. But we're doing a couple more, the lie the church sold us. And I think this needs to be a part of that episode, which is going to, because I literally want to dive into this, but I feel like this would be one of the conversations we talk about on the lie the church sold us. That the verse that they always use about going to church is never forsake the meeting of the brethren, never forsake gathering. And it's the one like monumental scripture that's used to bring people in,
right?
And everything you said is what I've been feeling, so I want to expound on that, but I want to do it in its own podcast so we can really like dive into time.
More than the 10 minutes.
I want to go into it though badly. And babe, did you already say you already said what you learned in it? Okay, cool. I'm so glad we did this because we're going to do a part two and ask some more questions and see where the conversations take us. And if you dig, look, we appreciate all messages. I got a message from a girl today. And she was so cute, so beautiful. Let me, you know, we are.
Are we about to fight?
Speaking of beautiful, remember that Akon song? Beautiful, beautiful.
One, that's two, three, four, five, six, seven, 8, 9, 10, 11, oh, here it goes. 12.
She's so awesome. If you guys message, we will answer. Just letting you know. She said, can you believe in the law of attraction or manifesting what you want and still be a Christian? These are the real kind of questions we get, right? And I love it. I love it because it's stuff that we can dive into. And please hit us up. Like if you like
these ideas or the stuff that we're doing, if you have ideas on what you want to hear us talk about, DM us. If you love what we've been doing, man, you really want to see this thing continue to grow far, just consider, if you guys want, we started a Patreon, and all it is like a monthly giving, anywhere from $2. Like, you can literally give $2 and be a part of this thing, all the way up to 25. And we give you extra content, extra videos, a lot of motivational stuff. And
Zoom calls
for the $25 people. We do 2 a month. Mandela for everyone who does 25 or 12, which is just podcast episodes between me and my wife. And then we're all giving videos of just encouragement and stuff. So, hey, this is just if you guys want to solidify and make sure that we keep moving forward, because all this stuff is extremely hard to do. I was just telling B, we just crossed the number to now we can pay rent for this place, because this is something y'all don't know, but me and the queen have been funding this, you know what I'm saying? So this is out of our pocket. We're not making any money. We're just trying to give y'all the best that we can from what God has given us. So we're not making money doing this. We're literally spending money doing this. So everybody who just gets down with us on that Patreon, we are grateful. Everybody who just listens, we are grateful. So just consider it. And regardless if you do or you don't, we freaking love you. We love that you guys are getting something from this, and we want to hear from you. But we're going to go on to part 2 of the questions.
We should answer that question in part 2.
Which one?
The one, can you be a Christian?
Yeah. Okay. We love you guys so much. And as we always say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.
Cheers.